Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Greater New York Hospital Association, RRS, Collaborative Conference Call. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance during the call, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's program, Ms. Hillary Jalon. Ms. Jalon, you may begin now.
Hello. Well, welcome, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us, and Happy New Year. Just want to let you know, in the subconference room here with me, I have Terry Straub and Mark Rosen, and also Rafael Ruiz. And I'm just going to briefly go through the agenda with you and then introduce our guest speaker for this call. First, what we decided to do, as we've been going on different site visits to various hospitals in the Rapid Response System Collaborative, a lot of them have shared some really great experiences with us that go beyond the code and call data. So during the conference calls, we're going to share some of those experiences that we've heard from the hospitals, the first being some information from Plainview Hospital about what they're doing and how they've looked at and managed sepsis patients by identifying these patients earlier through the rapid response system. And then after we go through that, we're going to talk a little bit about planning for the next learning session. So that's the third learning session of the collaborative. And then we'll talk a bit about a New York Times article that was recently in that paper just with regard to it was titled Hospitals Slow in Heart Cases. So without further ado, I'm just going to introduce Alicia DeLavori. She's a nurse, and she's the Quality Management Coordinator for Critical Care at Plainview Hospital. They have some great data and have fantastic results in the Rapid Response System Collaborative, and we wanted to have Alicia share some of their experiences specific to sepsis. And I'll just make a note that we know others of you are doing different kinds of great things and specific to sepsis. So once Alicia finishes talking, and then we get some input from Mark Rosen also, we'll ask you if any of you have had some similar experiences that you'd like to share with the group. So, Alicia, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Hillary. It's my pleasure to speak today, and thank you for inviting me. I would like to start out by explaining that I first took over the rapid response last February when we were doing about 14 calls a month. And our goal was to increase the number of calls because we kept hearing that the number of calls would decrease mortality. So we had our mandatory education or enrichment day for nursing, and I put together a presentation that I gave as well in the days that I wasn't there. The director of critical care delivered the presentation. And immediately following this mass education, the number of calls doubled. So as I was entering data, I noticed that there seemed to be a lot of calls in the first 24 hours. And when I started looking at these cases individually, I saw that a lot of them were sepsis patients, patients who were getting admitted to the emergency room, getting some fluid, getting admitted to med-surg, then they get their call for rapid response. They're needing boluses of fluid because the call for a rapid response was for low blood pressure. And then they would need to be transferred to the ICU. So I brought this to our PICG meeting, our performance improvement group, and we had these charts reviewed by the director of the emergency department. And when we started looking very closely, we saw the opportunity to improve our fluid management of sepsis patients in the emergency room. And over time, what has happened now is although I still have a number of calls in the first 24 hours, they're not for sepsis. We've been able to manage our sepsis patients better in the emergency department with their fluids, and the residents and interns are much more aware of fluid management for sepsis, and we've really started to turn that around, and it's been wonderful. I stretched out the numbers from 24 to 48 hours to see if I could catch any more sepsis cases. And stretching it out to 48 hours of admission didn't help me a lot to pick up any more cases. To give you some specific numbers, in May, June, and July, our call numbers were 44, 40, and 50, respectively. And the number of calls within the first 24 hours were 17, 12, and 9, which is a large number. And when you think that when patients get admitted to the hospital through the emergency room, the first 24 hours is when they have the most potential to become unstable, so it makes sense that you have a lot of calls in the first 24 hours. A lot of those cases were being transferred to ICU, and of those, almost all of them needed fluid boluses. Many of them were sepsis. In August, September, and October, the number of calls were 38, 36, and 43, respectively, and I apologize that you don't have graphs to look at. The number of calls in the first 24 hours was 5, 8, and 14. And when I saw the number jump up to 14 out of 43 calls, I was a little bit concerned. But as I said, I pulled the charts that were called in the first 24 hours to look at them to see if they were sepsis. And what happened was of those 14 calls, 5 were transferred to a higher level of care. 6 of the 14 did need fluid bolus, but only 3 of them were sepsis. Those fluid boluses were for other reasons. Patients had GI bleeds and whatnot. But those 3 cases went back to the emergency room physician, and their fluid management was appropriate based on the director's review of that chart, of those 3 charts. So the number of transfers to a higher level of care of those patients in the first 24 hours was 5 of the 14. Has anyone else had a similar experience with that?
So what we'll have to do there, Alicia, is open up the lines because this is a muted call.
Oh, okay.
Where they'll ask you questions at the end.
Okay.
Yeah, hi, this is Mark Rosen. Yeah, I'm not aware that anybody's looked at that. I mean, I know we haven't been looking at it. It's like on what hospital day was the rapid response team called in? And it seems that you have a lot in the first day and – honestly, I never noticed, and if anybody's looked at that, it'd be interesting to hear. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe we could open up the line and see if anyone else has experienced that. I enter the data as well as review it, so that's why it was obvious to me.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to have all the lines open?
So before we do that, is there anything else you wanted to talk about? I mean, one of the reasons I think we invited Plainview also, and I'll give full disclosure. Yes, even though Plainview's part of North Shore Health System, Plainview's got really good results, and in fact, they're really outstanding within the system with increasing numbers of calls and reducing rates of codes. So I was just, Alicia, are you finished with your presentation?
Yes, I'm done with sepsis, and I can talk about any other aspect of rapid response that you'd like to cover.
How you got the numbers of calls to be increased, because what we did see is at your center, you did what the book says is supposed to happen, is that when the calls go up, the codes go down. And that hasn't been the case everywhere. I was wondering if you could sort of share your experience about how you got staff to call more.
Well, like I said, when we had our enrichment day, our mandatory education, 500 and I believe 25 nurses for both Plainview and Syosset attended. And the presentation that I made started out very basic, making sure that everyone was aware of what rapid response is, why we call it, what number they actually have to dial, because I found that a lot of nurses were complaining they would call and they would be on hold because they were dialing 0 for the operator. And in our facilities, we use our cardiac arrest number so that we can get the operator quickly. And that cleared up a lot of the nurses' frustration when they were calling rapid response. just explaining it more to the nurses and helping them understand how important it is and that it is going to make a difference in patients' outcomes. And also, I think it makes the nurses more comfortable just knowing that there's support, you know, giving them the opportunity to say, you know what, I recognize something's wrong. I just don't know what it is, and it's okay that you don't know, but call for help. I mean, that's really what it boiled down to, and the numbers went up. Our numbers nearly doubled.
Yeah. Nope, and the code rates went down, which is really what the whole the point of the I was going to say the exercise, but the point of the maneuver is.
Okay. Right.
All right. Any other?
This is Terry. I just wanted to find out, what kind of training did you do with your staff for the early recognition of sepsis?
My director of the emergency department, mm-hmm. he met with his physicians who were the physicians who were involved in the cases that were problems. When I say problems, that the fluid management had the opportunity to improve. And when the ED director met with those physicians and had a discussion with them, showed them the record, it improved. I also met with our director of the residence and intern programs,
mm-hmm.
and he has done lectures to his residents and interns about sepsis, how to recognize it, and how to manage it. So attacking it from those two aspects has really helped. In addition to that, there's another lecture that's coming up for the ED nursing staff. It hasn't happened yet, just to help them make sure that they're doing everything that they can to manage sepsis correctly.
Because mm-hmm. I think that's the major challenge. It's that recognition piece, and how do you educate everyone? What do you think, Mark?
I think that's it. And it's not only early recognition, but, you know, then doing something about it once you recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of folks recognize it, and then they go through the usual drill. And I think, you know, by getting the rapid response teams in early, that's really where it's at.
I think everyone knows that sepsis is on the radar with a sepsis bundle that's expected to be coming out in the North Shore LHI Health System. And it's certainly, you know, on the IHI bundle. And it needs a little bit more attention.
Okay.
Well, how do you want to go about this? Do you want to open up all the lines for everyone, or do you want to just take questions and some comments from some of the information that Alicia shared?
Why don't we start taking questions, Hillary?
Okay. So, operator, if you could just see if anyone has any questions or anything that they'd like to add to what Alicia was saying with regard to the sepsis information.
Yes, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. Our first question or comment comes from Cynthia Musetti from the New York Hospital in Queens. Your line is open, ma'am.
Yes, hi. This is Elise Goldberg, actually, the Rapid Response Team Coordinator at New York Hospital, Queens. And we also track our sepsis patients, and I have a year-to-date from January 1st, 2007 till December 31st of last year. And out of 819 patients that we saw on the rapid response team, 179 of them were sepsis that we called into our sepsis hotline, which totaled out a 22% call that involved sepsis. And when you look at the trigger that the nurses were calling for, overwhelming was the hypotension. So we're going to start looking at the 24-hour period and see if they are occurring during the first 24 hours of admission. So that's definitely helpful information that we will be looking into.
Thanks, Alicia.
Alicia.
Elise Goldberg. I'm sorry, Elise. A lot of Alicia's here. And we knew that you, when we went on your site visit too, you shared with us that you started to do some work with sepsis management because of the rapid response system intervention.
Yes, but I like the idea of educating the ED nurses as well to clue them in, as well as the physicians to look a little bit more into, you know, rapid treatment as well as assessment of the sepsis patients.
Great. Do you have any questions for Alicia, too, about what they're doing?
No, I just, we're going to start looking at the 24-hour period after admission and look a little more closely into those patients doing the chart review. I think that will be very helpful.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Looking at it, the patients that were called in the first 24 hours helped me narrow down where the problem was with the fluid management, and it went back to the ED in those particular cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question or comment comes from the line of Althea Bailey from Brookdale University Hospital. Your line is open.
My name is Dr. Bezzi from Brookdale Hospital, and I would like to know, among the call that the response team got, and I would like to know the comorbidity of those patients, because, you know, are we talking about patients who were seriously ill or patients who may just simply have some minor, you know, condition and then were able to intervene on time?
I think, correct me, I just want to make sure I understood the question. You want to know if the patients that were having the calls in the first 24 hours, if they had a lot of comorbidities?
That's correct.
Our patient population does have a lot of comorbidities. More than 50% of our population that gets admitted is over 70.
Yeah.
These particular patients specifically, I don't have their medical records in front of me, so I can't tell you what their comorbidities were. However, just based on our demographics, I'd say that we don't have a very young population in this hospital.
And a follow-up question would be, were you able to reduce the amount of cold by intervening early?
Yes. I don't know if the graphs are public based on the number of calls and the mortality, but our mortality rates have come down since we doubled the number of rapid response calls.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone phone. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Jesse Abraham from New York Hospital in Queens. Your line is open.
Hi. I'm with Elise Goldberg. I'm just off-site right now. I just want to let you know that we, as Elise pointed out, we detect a lot of sepsis cases during the rapid response. We carry this little ISTAT machine that has a cartridge that records the blood gas and lactic acid. So we get the results of the lactic acid right away, and we definitely know it's a sepsis patient, and we hang the antibiotics on the patient before we leave the patient's bedside, so we start the treatment right away during a rapid response call.
Thank you, Jesse.
That's wonderful that you can do a lactic acid at the bedside.
Thank you.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone phone. I'm showing no additional questions or comments at this time.
Okay, well,
Hillary, I just had a quick question,
uh-huh.
Maybe for Jesse or anyone, maybe Mark or Alicia knows. How much does that device cost that records the lactic acid? I guess nobody knows.
Let's see.
I don't know.
Operator, can you open Jesse's?
This is Mark. You know, when I was at Beth Israel, this was now a year and a half ago, we looked at it, and the device is cheap, but the cartridges are very expensive.
Like,
it's one of those things.
Hmm.
And Jesse, if you could, sort of accumulate your experience and show that it's useful. See, I'll tell you, I'm sort of a low-tech guy. You know, if you got abnormal vital signs, you're probably sick enough that I don't need to know the lactic acid level. It's nice to have. So, Jesse, if you could sort of accumulate some data on, what you learned from it, did it actually change how patients were disposed or change therapy, that would be very interesting.
Operator, can you just open Jesse's line just so that she can respond to that?
Ms. Jesse, could you repress the one key on your touchtone phone, please? Your line is open.
We've had wonderful results with that iStat. It's a wonderful tool that we can carry around. And even like sometimes we can make the decision whether we should intubate a patient or give the patient a BiPAP trial before, at the call.
Yeah.
So that mission is wonderful. And the doctors look forward to using that mission because it's only us that carry it and the floors don't have that.
Do you have any information on what a cartridge costs, what it costs per test to run?
I don't know. Our hospital is very liberal and general with this iStat machine, so we get it without too much problem, so I don't know the cost of it.
Okay. All right. I mean, that would be interesting. That'll sort of segue into that New York Times/New England Journal of Medicine article about monitoring and things like that, which we'll talk about that later.
Right. Do you want to talk about that now, Mark, and then we can...
Yeah, let's talk about it now. So you've read it, it's all over the newspapers and the New York... This was from the New England Journal of Medicine, January 3rd, and the name of the article is Delayed Time to Defibrillation After In-Hospital Cardiac Arrest. So it's January 3rd, but everybody's read it in the Times or seen it on the news. And, of course, the news hook is... that you have a better chance of surviving VFib in a casino than you do in a hospital.
Or Nordstrom's.
Nordstrom's. You sound like you've had experience.
No.
Because they've got defibrillators in the casinos, I suppose. In any case, the sum and substance of the article was based on a registry of ventricular fibrillation and pulseless ventricular tachycardia, the time to shock and the likelihood of survival, that about a third of patients were found and got their shock greater than 3 minutes after being shocked, and those people had a substantially worse outcome. And that the other characteristics of worse outcome were small hospitals, being admitted for non-cardiac reasons, and being a black patient. And so, of course, this provokes a lot of response. The editorial basically said, wouldn't it be nice if we could monitor everybody in the hospital and that perhaps the technology would be there? And it sort of stands to reason that if you're in the CCU or you're in the cardiac surgical ICU and or you're in telemetry and you're getting monitored, you're more likely to get shocked faster. And, of course, if you're not being monitored and you're found in VFib or pulseless ventricular tachycardia, you're more likely to die. All true. And the editorial is, let me just look up the name of the editorial is Survival After Tachyarrhythmic Arrest, What Are We Waiting For? Really calling for better technology and more monitoring, all of which is nice. And... I could state that in all of your hospitals, all of your telemetry units are full right now. And, you can't get enough of it. Certainly associated with better outcomes. So we just bring that up because, A, it's interesting. B, it's not 100% on point for rapid response teams because if somebody's in VFib or pulseless VTAC, they don't need a rapid response team. They need a code. But it just points to early detection and early rescue. Anybody want to have any comment? And why do people? Why is the outcome better in a casino than it is in the hospital? And of course, the natural answer is most people in the casino aren't sick, other than perhaps terminal gambling and cigarette smoking.
Maybe it's the alcohol that keeps them going.
And the alcohol, which might have thrown them into the tachyarrhythmia. So in any case, it's a different population group, and it's a nice hook for the newspapers and television. And, you know, but it's a different patient population. Any comments? Anybody want to? I guess we can open up the whole thing.
Yeah, why don't we do that? And this way we could have a good discussion on this.
Yeah. Operator, so if you could just open up all lines.
All lines are open.
Okay, and just make note, everyone, that we can hear all the background at this point. So just put us on mute unless you're speaking.
Okay. Have a comment?
Hi, it's Cindy from New York Hospital, Queens.
Yeah.
Hi, Cindy.
We were just talking about why it's more successful in the casinos, but at 3 o'clock in the morning, there's a lot of people around in a casino watching the witnessed event, and then 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, at night in a hospital in a patient's room, there's not all those eyes, so that could be a...
No, and absolutely right. Plus, it's much more noticeable because if a guy drops off of his blackjack table, but he will notice it.
Unfortunately, Cindy, we received calls here at Greater New York from the media and from Senator Schumer's office, and they don't want to hear that people are being watched all the time.
I know.
So it's one of those sticky wickets. Yeah, it makes sense that someone's always watching you in a public area, and you respond to someone quickly. But at the same time, from a consumer perspective, everyone assumes you're being watched all the time in the hospital and you're safer there.
This is Alicia from Plainview. I have a comment. I wonder if the hospitals they looked at that had such slow response times, I wonder if they had rapid response in their hospitals, if there were signs and symptoms that could have been noticed sooner and prevented the cardiac arrest in the first place?
That's a great question. I did not see that type of data in the article.
They were saying actually as a next step that they want to try to identify characteristics like that at the hospitals.
Okay.
Yep. And I guess the conclusion is we're going to move our telemetry unit to Foxwoods.
Okay. Non-telemetry unit.
Or you could bring gambling into the hospital, and there'd be lots of people around
all
the time.
That's true.
All right. The other thing Senator Schumer doesn't want to hear is we're gambling all the time in the hospital. But let's. Okay.
Well, I can say, you know, I offered up, you know, what can you do about it? That they need to look at the ability to bill for rapid response, and they are actually interested. So I'm going to continue to work with them to push that type of legislation.
Wonderful.
And if the technology gets better and cheaper, you know, someday, I suppose, in our lifetimes, everybody will have a cheap wireless telemeter on them in the hospital, but not this week.
Chip.
Okay.
You know what, Mark? I'll just point out something, too. I actually saved a life here at Greater New York using the defibrillator.
Yeah, really?
I did. And it's because everyone came running. I'm the only nurse, really, on staff. And I didn't follow a protocol because I hadn't defibrillated anyone in ages by part of the usual code team. But I actually defibrillated this woman 5 or 6 times, which is more than most places do it.
Yeah.
Because the machine kept telling me to defibrillate again, defibrillate again. Yeah. And now she's fine.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Really? All right.
So.
I hope she took you out to dinner or something.
She's forever indebted. So.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. How about we turn off the, well, I don't know what you want to do, but we're going to talk about the next learning session for a minute.
Yes.
Yep.
We can leave the lines open if everyone could keep the phones on mute and not talk for a moment. So do you want to get started about the next learning session, Mark?
All right, well, we want to, we promised you and we delivered on the promises. We want to have another learning session where we actually get together and look each other in the eye. One of the things... that we certainly wanted to do would be to review the data, actually to determine what, if anything, we've accomplished. Certainly those centers that have accomplished something, we'd like to hear some of the reasons that they think they've accomplished them. One of the things that has been really hard to do within this collaborative is that those hospitals that can't get started really aren't getting anywhere. we don't really have access, and nobody seems to be talking, and we'd really like to help. So perhaps we could have a little bit of participation from those hospitals in a non-judgmental, non-accusatory way, but in a way that we try to help to really try to get the programs off the ground and really to plan out some next steps in terms of looking at different endpoints. Maybe we could kick the tires on some endpoints like patient satisfaction, nursing satisfaction, which actually may be far more impressive than code rates, which would be great if we could show that too. The trend, I don't know if Raphael has any new data, but it looked like things were moving in the right direction, at least across the collaborative, which would be something that would be important to really review and actually to publicize.
I'm actually in the process of updating the database from all the data that came in just before and through the holiday season.
Yeah.
So we're getting that in right now, and we should have new reports out for January in a week or so.
That's great.
Raphael, do most hospitals have their data in, or are we still missing a lot?
It's
really critical.
To be quite honest, I won't know until I finish getting everything in and then generate sort of data check, my submission check.
Okay.
But I will be sure to let you know.
Thanks.
We got a lot in from our last plea during the last conference call, so the results may change a little.
I said, do we want to talk about the agenda and what you think everyone on the line would be helpful to for a next session?
Let's talk about also the date. I mean, I think we were looking first week of March. Am I right? Somewhere around there?
Somewhere around there. There are school vacations and other events in March, so we just want to be respectful of that.
Okay, and the
I think the first week of March vacations have not exactly started yet.
All right, and the likely venue would be where?
Probably the AC again.
Okay.
If that works for everyone, unless anyone has another suggestion.
Okay, so in terms of what the agenda would be, I'll tell you what I'm interested in, but, you know, it's not all about me. I would be interested really in a detailed look at the data. What have we accomplished? You know, what has happened across the collaborative in terms of increasing numbers of calls, reducing codes, and possibly reducing mortality? I figured a couple of presentations from some of the centers that seem to be particularly successful and what they attribute their success to, and perhaps we could come up with some common, some common interventions that get things working. If possible, and this is a tougher one, is to hear from some of the places that, and I know this is going to be hard to do, but if we can, some of the places that can't get it started. And maybe that's an offline conversation in terms of, you know, how we could get things started. And looking at, you know, some sort of exploration of alternative endpoints. I think what we ought to do is perhaps have a literature, you know, maybe a session, maybe 40 minutes or 45 minutes on what's the literature been telling us. As you know, there's been a lot of stuff written about it. There was a recent JAMA article about pediatric rapid response teams. There was that Peter Pronovost article about walk, don't run, because they're not really proven, and some other articles to dispute that. So perhaps something along the lines of, you know, what is the literature telling us? There was a Cochrane literature-based, you know, evidence-based review that says the data really aren't conclusive. Like to put our data up against what's already been done, and take it from there. And certainly, anything else anybody else is interested in. Does anybody have any suggestions for things that ought to be on this program?
Mark, this is Terry. I was thinking maybe we should have a session on talking to the patients in palliative care.
Okay.
But it's only a thought.
No, that's a good idea in terms of that's one of the dispositions of or one of the outcomes of a rapid response team. And perhaps a center with more experience with it than others might be interested in leading that one. Anybody else have any suggestions right now? Any thoughts?
any needs that would help you move it, your initiative to the next level.
I mentioned at the last, this is Alicia Plainview again, I mentioned at the last conference about maybe looking at a tool to follow patients 24 hours after their rapid response call, having them reassessed by the resident or intern group because they're on the rapid response team, just having them reevaluated to make sure that whatever occurred during the rapid response intervention, that the patient's improving if they were not transferred to a higher level of care at the time of the initial rapid response. Do you think that would be helpful?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I defer to our colleagues on the phone and to Mark, who knows how practical it would be, but it makes sense for sure.
Yeah, you know what, Alicia, let's go offline.
I'm sorry, I heard a lot of squeaking.
Let's you and I talk about that one offline.
Okay.
In terms of developing it, because I think so. It's just, what we'd like to do is get this well planned before we converge on the New York Athletic Club.
Okay.
Okay, look, I say this at my own peril. Why don't you guys think about it and get back to us? And I know that means that there will be a 95% non-response rate. But if anybody has any issues or topics they'd like to address, let's get them out there. In the meanwhile, we'll get together among ourselves and try to come up with something, actually put it out there for some more discussion, perhaps in the next couple of weeks. That sound reasonable?
Yeah.
After preliminary program, when you guys can react and terrible, you're missing this, and this. That might also
be helpful.
Yeah, be helpful.
Yeah,
and this way it gives you the opportunity to share the information with your colleagues who couldn't join us on the call. Anything else, Hillary?
The only other thing that we have on the agenda was about the site visits. We went to a couple of them. The most recent one was at St. Catherine of Siena Medical Center in December before the holidays, and we are scheduling still other site visits now that the holidays are over. And for those, I know Mark is mentioning the hospitals that are having some problems getting up and running. We'd certainly would love to come to your hospital and try to help you out if you would have us. Just from the site visits, we've been finding some really interesting things other than the call and the code data, and I think that they really help, and the teams get really excited to share some of their results with the collaborative. But that's it. Anything else, Terry or Mark?
Nope.
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone, for joining the call today.
All right, and Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Alicia, for presenting.
Thanks much.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.